Welcome to It Is What It Is. I'm Shamri, and before I even get into this, I have to fangirl for just like 2 seconds. So, as some of you who listen to like every episode, some of you don't know, in February I broke my ankle. I did it so bad that they had to like surgically put this bitch back together. And I finally get to go back to work on Monday for 4 hours at a time. So finally, I get to go back into the Walmart amongst my people, which means I get my podcast back because I saved my podcast up. And I saved Morbid and Armchair Expert because those three people, they just make me smile all day. And so I tweeted about it, right? And I'm like, they're never gonna even see this, but like, hey, what are the odds? And then I sat there, and a couple minutes later, my phone's like, doo-doo. And I was like, what the fuck, doo-doo. So I look at it, and it's like, a Morbid Podcast liked your fucking tweet. I almost died. And then Ash tweeted on it. And so, like, I almost died. And so, like, finally, something good happened in 2020. Super proud. Legitly almost died. You guys have no idea. Ugh. God. I fell in love with them on the Toy Box Killer, if you guys haven't listened to that one. On them. Ugh, God, I fell in love. Fell in love. Listened to every one of them. And except for February, obviously. I haven't listened to anything since February till now. So I'm super excited for Monday. Super, super stoked to go back to work. Anywho. So, let's get to this shit. All right, so I picked Robert Lee Yates. And his name is actually Robert Lee Yates Jr. Gotta put that Jr. in there for some reason. It's important. He was born on May 27th, 1952. He grew up in Oak Harbor, Washington, in a middle-class family. They attended the local Seventh-day Administrative Church. I have no idea what the hell that means, but he graduated from Oak Harbor High School in 1970. In 1975, he was hired by the Washington State Department of Corrections to work as a correctional officer at the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla, Washington. In October 1977, Mr. Yates enlisted in the U.S. Army, in which he became a certified flying civilian transport airplanes and helicopters. Yates was stationed in various countries outside of the U.S. He went to Germany, Somalia, and Haiti during the United Nations peacekeeping mission of the 1980s. Yates also served 3 years in the Army National Guard as a helicopter pilot, and from April 1997 through April 2000, he earned several accommodations while doing this and service medals during his military career, including the U.S. Master Advisory Badge. Nice. Yates left the Army in April 1996, a year and a half short of being eligible for full retirement benefits and a pension. At this time, though, luckily, the military was reducing its numbers, so he got his full retirement despite being short the time. Because usually you have to serve a whole 20 years. Then they moved to Spokane, Washington. His wife and five children's. He has four daughters and one son. So that's a lot of children. It's this two-story house that is important. It's two stories. It's in a good little community, like a little cul-de-sac looking thing. I lived in Washington, fun fact, with my older sister for like a smidgen of a time. Loved it. Loved, loved, loved Spokane. I love Spokane. So his first victims were back in 1975, almost two decades earlier. His first victims are Susan Savage, she's 22 years old, and Patrick Oliver, who's 21 years old. They were a couple enjoying a picnic on Mill Creek when he found them, and they crossed paths with Yates. He was practicing his target shooting in the same area. So he just used them as live targets. So he executed them, shooting Patrick three times in the head and then shooting Susan twice. He buried their bodies under a pile of brush. Their remains were found just days later. Ugh. And it took 25 years for him to admit to their killing, so they were unsolved for that long. After his arrest, he was facing the death penalty, so he made extra confessions to get the death penalty off of his charge. I mean, not his charge, but like off of the table. You know what I mean? You know what I mean. So he confessed to another victim in July 7th, 1988. And he pinpointed her location and said what happened to her. Her name was Stacy Elizabeth Hawk. Hahn. There's no K. She was 23 years old and she was a street worker. Her remains were discovered later in Skagit County. And she was shot in the head. And then this is when he like gets serious. We break and we take like a break for like a smack in like 1996, like right in the beginning of 1997. Well, I don't know, August really isn't the beginning. People call it the beginning, I call it the beginning of the year. Well, midway, I guess. But he starts again, he starts like legit in 1997. So on August 26, 1997, the remains of Jennifer Joseph, she is 16 years old. She was found on a street, so just laying there on the street. Ugh, God, how horrible. DNA was left at the scene, DNA swabs were taken, and semen was found. It was a secluded area of the street that she was found in. But nonetheless, he did not have a pattern of like where he would leave his bodies, and that comes to show. Because she's found on the street, and then other ones are found like outside of town. So he waits. And then on November 5th, 1997, the decomposed body of Darla Sue Scott, she was 29 years old. She was found on Hangman Valley Road, and she was buried in a shallow grave with two plastic bags covering her head, and she had two gunshots to the head. Also, DNA was taken from her body as well that matched Yates. On December 7th, 1997, another victim was discovered. She's Melinda Mercer. She was 24 years old. Her remains were found in Tacoma. She also had plastic bags and a V covering her head and two gunshots as well. Less than 2 weeks later, on December 18, 1997, the decomposing remains of 36-year-old Sean L. Johnson were found on Hangman Valley Road as well. Cause of death was also 2 gunshots to the head, and plastic bag was also used to cover the head. And again, DNA samples were also taken that matched Mr. Yates. 8 days later, 8 fucking days. 8 days. Like, you gotta think. Usually they say that, like, fighting or, like, within the family is what, like, the killer, like, is like, fuck this, and, like, leaves and then goes and kills and then comes home to the family. And he's like, let's play Monopoly. But, like, 8 days, bro, right after Christmas. Jesus. On December 26, 1997, the body of 30-year-old Laura Wilson was found in a gravel pit near Hangman Valley Road. She died of a gunshot to the head as well. She had a plastic bag over her head, and the DNA was recovered from her body and her fingertips, and fingerprints were taken off of the plastic bag. Next to her body was also the other set of remains, and that was of Shauna Aime McClanahan. She was 39 years old, same cause of death, plastic bag, DNA, and she had soil and plant life that was traced back to his backyard. Yeah, that's fucking nuts. It was traced back to his backyard. So that's insane. So everybody says, I was reading the forums or whatever, the little chat groups, about this stuff, about him. And everybody was like, these women were found with semen orally, anally, and vaginally. Mostly all of them were found that way. And they're like, oh, he was getting head and then he shot him. Am I the only one who thinks that that sounds fucking dumb? Like, you can't shoot someone in the head while receiving oral sex and not shoot your wiener. You know? Like, you blow your dick off. And, everybody was saying it. They're like, oh, how disrespectful to die like that, giving head. And I'm like, she didn't. At least, am I the only one who thinks that's fucking dumb? I think it's dumb. I think you'd blow your dick off. Let me know, because, am I the only one who thinks that? Because I tried, and, a bunch of other ones were like, no, he did it when he was doing the anal rape, which may be true, but he also was a necrophiliac, so half of the time, the sexual relations, the coitus, was done after death. So, yeah. He's caca. In 1998, the next victim was discovered on February 8th, 1998. She was 41-year-old Sunny Oscar. Her remains were discovered in a wooded area in western Spokane County. She also had, of course, the gunshot to the head, the plastic bag to cover the head, and the semen recovered. So on April 1st, 1998, the decomposing body of 34-year-old Linda Maybin is discovered just 50 yards away from, oh my gosh, the Wusson and the McClanahan grave sites. So, and the cause of death was the same. Bag on the head, bullets, DNA on the body. So he was just repeating the same method of killing, but he was disposing of these women differently. And most of these women had the same job occupation. They were all street workers. And so that's why he preyed upon them. The next one is Mashinley Durling, 47 years old. Hopefully I did not butcher that too bad. She became the next victim. She was discovered on July 7th, 1998. Her remains were discovered in Spokane's East Canal in a neighborhood. I mean, East Central neighborhood. Sorry, not in a canal. A central neighborhood. However, the victims... Oh, wow. This victim was not raped. A witness placed her alive with just a week before. Unlike other victims, which were found within months, she was found weeks later. That's weird. I wonder what happened. They never go into much. I wonder what happened, though, because, like, if it didn't go that far, I wonder why not. There has to be something that stopped it. October 13th, 1998, they found the decomposing body of Connie Elefante Louise? Eloise? Eloise. Yeah, fucking don't know about that. Age 35 years old, she was found in Tacoma. She had one gunshot to the head, plastic bag, DNA. The last known victim was Melody Ann Muffern. Muffern. She was 43 years old and she was disappeared in 1998. Now this one, when they were like, you tell us where her body is, we have not found her. He's just admitting to her. We haven't found her. This is the one where he's like, okay, we'll check it out. Give me a piece of paper. And he draws a square. And another square. And another square. And he's like, check it. This is my house. This is my bedroom window. This one's her. And they all were like, shut your fucking mouth. They had done sonar readings of his backyard. And she was never found. She was so close up to the house. And it was like above his window, but mainly outside his daughter's window. Ugh. God. How gross. Gross, 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 gross. But yeah, that's where they were found. Ugh, I can't even imagine. Can you imagine being the kids? Ugh. He pinpointed the exact location, October 18th, 2000. I just can't even imagine. Ugh. They really, really thought they had searched his yard. Like, they were all kind of pissed off because it was right underneath their nose and they had missed her. So they were all kind of butthurt about that for like a second. So we have Patrick Oliver, Susan Savage, both on July 13th, 1975. Stacy and Sharon and Patricia, sorry. Heather, Jennifer, Darla, Melinda, Shauna Johnson, and then Shauna A. McClanahan. Lori, Sunny, Linda Mabin and Linda Davies, Melody, and Michelle, and Connie. And the one that got away. Okay, so this one is so crazy. Crazy. Okay, so on August 1st, 1998, Christina Smith was doing her job to support herself. And she agreed to perform oral sex on a man in exchange for $40, which I'm saying, that's hella cheap. I would be the worst because I'm like, ugh, to that? Just to give you head like $100, bro. I just ain't about it. Like, ugh, anything else, you know? $100. She was doing 40 though. Nice. They were in a man's van in a secluded parking lot in Spokane. According to her, she asked him if he was the serial killer preying on the street workers at the time. He said, no, I have 5 fucking kids. I would never do such a thing. She was doing her job, you know. Within a couple of minutes, he pulled the gun out. And he tried to shoot her in the head. I guess that's where everybody got that from. I think he'd blow your dick off. It really must have been her lucky, super lucky day. Because the bullet only scraped the side of her face. So she struggled to stay awake. She's falling backwards. She thought she was hit. She thought she was gonna die. The x-ray shows that she has fragments in her face and her skull. But that don't fucking matter because she's alive. You know? Amen. That's what she was blessed with. She still got to live. How crazy. On April 18th the next year, she's sitting there fucking having her morning coffee and reading the newspaper. And she sees his mugshot in the newspaper and she's like, that's that motherfucker. So she calls the police. Turns him in. So what they were doing at the time is like after the third body, the cops were like, you guys, this must be the same guy. So they started getting lists because there was like a white I own one, Corvette. There was a white Corvette in a van that had been seen. And so they weren't really sure. And so they were like, okay, so this person in the strip that they were doing in Spokane, it's a little main strip. And so, well, not a main strip, it's like a side strip. But anyway, they were like, okay, so we must have pulled this guy over before. He has to have like some sort of trust with them if they're still willing to get into the car. Because at this time, these girls were like, motherfucker, get out and I'll suck your dick. I am not getting in there. You know, like they were trying to be more cautious and they were really only trying to do business with repeat customers. So they knew that he had to have some type of interaction with law enforcement before. So they were all, every one of them were coming from the same background. They all had the plastic bag. They all had the DNA. They all had the gun. And the gun was a .25 caliber. They say most likely a semi-automatic pistol. No idea what that means. They retrieved anything they could off the bodies. Hair, grass. Literally everything they could get. They brushed their hair. Like everything they could get off of these girls to help solve their case, they did. Everything was sent to the state crime lab, in which all the DNA and everything all came back to everything had to come from one person. Like all these women encountered the same person. On November 10th, 1998, Yates was pulled over by police while driving his old Honda Civic. And on the passenger seat was a lady of the night. He said that he only picked her up because he was asked by her father to do this and nothing else. Simple favor. He had no idea. Her dad called me. Shut the fuck up. Dumbest shit I've ever heard. Who believes that, by the way? But the policeman let him go without even recording the incident. Because he's like, okay, you're dumb. Go ahead. That was the dumbest lie I've ever heard. So the investigators then go back and they find out that the first person that went missing, Jennifer, she was seen getting into the white Corvette. So everybody was like, no, she got into a white Corvette. We've seen it around. It wasn't much because at the time, even though Corvettes then were still kind of on the spendy side, they were everywhere. They were bitching, you know? So they were there. So that's when they got the list of people who had that car. And then they ran that car against the other names. And in those columns that they had, Robert Yates kept popping up. In November of 1998, they had an encounter. In September 1997, again, encounter. More women were like, oh yeah, that white vet. Mm-hmm. We know. So, it had to have been him. So, on September 19th, 1988, he met up with investigators who told him that his name was showing up in the investigation, but he was only there for questioning. He was free to leave at any point in time and not any answer, any questions at all. He was not a suspect. He agreed to go in on this interview. So, in about November 1988, the police pulled him over, asked him about the pulling over with the lady of the night in the vehicle. And he stuck to the same story that he told the police then. He said, no, dude, that was a coworker. I'm a friend of her dad's. He asked me to pick her up. And when he was like, okay, they were like, okay, well, give us her daddy's name. We'll go double check. He was like, well, it mistakes me. Right now, I can't remember his name. I haven't worked there in a long time. So you're like, yeah. So then they were like, hey, I wonder, dude, did you have a white vet? And he goes, oh, dude, I did, but I sold it. I don't even have it anymore. And they were like, you know what, Mr. Yates, we're sorry for bothering you. If you just go ahead and give us a DNA sample, we'll just leave you the fuck alone because that will prove you're innocent, sir. And he goes, excuse me? No. That is too much of an extreme request for a father of five and a working man and a vet. Not that he drives like a vet, you know, like an ex-military. So he was like, no, you guys are insulting me. So the investigators tracked down the new owner of that white vet in January 2000, and then they collect the fibers from the car. Well, at least selling the car was the one correct thing Yates probably ever did to help the investigation against him. Because with that information, they found the car, and in the car were the fibers that matched the car to the victims. Like the victims from the fibers from the car on the victims matched. They all matched to Jennifer. And when it was searched, they found dry blood on the passenger side of the vehicle. And then they found more underneath the seat. Oh, God. So they didn't have any DNA for her. So they used her parents' DNA, and that was a match. Like, they used her parents' DNA to compare with hers. How sad. Like, she's 16 years old. You know what I mean? Like, what DNA did she really leave in the world? And yet, I'm just, God. How horrible. I can't even imagine. That's when they finally had enough, because they also had a piece of her blouse underneath that shirt. So they finally had enough to go and arrest him. And they do. On April 18th, 2000, at 6:30 in the morning, they wake up the whole Yates family, and he is arrested for the murder of Jennifer. After his arrest, they have a search warrant. It was executed, and it was also and a search warrant executed on the 1977 white Corvette he previously owned. And like I said, they found a whole bunch of shit in there when they actually pulled it back. And the only reason why they weren't like 100% sure is because he got all that stuff kind of taken away, because on the on the report, there we go, that's the word, the report, it was misread. It says Camaro, not Corvette. Simple fuck ups will get you. So they discovered the blood that linked Yates, and then the DNA from Yates himself that linked him to the other 12 women. And in 2000, he was charged officially with a whole 13 counts of first degree and one count of attempted first degree in Spokane County. As a part of his plea bargain, he had to confess to the other ones, like I told you, to avoid the death penalty, but he was officially sentenced to 408 years in prison. In 2001, he was charged in Pierce County with the two additional murders of Melinda and Connie in 1997 and 1998. Which they were linked through DNA, of course. And in September 19th, 2000, he was convicted of those two murders. And he was sentenced to death by lethal injection on October 3rd, 2002. The 2002 death sentence was appealed, of course, on the grounds that Yates believed his plea bargain was as good as it got. He was told he wasn't going to get death, and like that's what he was told. And so it was rejected, of course, in 2007 by the Washington Supreme Court. A September 19th, 2008 execution date was set by Chief Justice Gurry Alexander, pending additional appeals, because everybody always says there is one. In 2013, Yates's attorney filed habeas corpus with the courts, saying that he is mentally ill through no fault of his own, suffers from severe necrophilia disorder, paraphiliac disorder. That made him commit the murders. They knew it was a long shot, but still, they had to try it. I don't think, in quotes, this is from the prosecutor. I don't think Mr. Yates helps his cause by relying on the fact that he is a necrophiliac. And he also wanted them to know that he found Jesus. And once again, I'm just saying, if it wasn't for prison or jail, no one would find that motherfucker, you know? Like, he would just only be known by a couple few thousand, you know? But like, when people go to prison, they find him like day one. But he found him. Nonetheless, thank God Robert Lee Yates was forgiven. He remains incarcerated at the Washington State Penitentiary. His case was commissioned further complicated by the Washington governor at the time, because he said no death warrant would be signed under his rule, his time in office. He would not be signing any death warrants at all. He says it's cheaper for the people of Washington for these people to sit in jail and die of natural causes, jailhouse justice, whatever have you, than it is to actually go through with the killing of them. So in July 2015, the Washington Supreme Court once again rejected any efforts made by Yates to get his conviction withdrawn. And after the Washington State ruled in 2018, to avoid the death penalty, his sentence is now given that he will have life imprisonment, obviously, without the possibility of parole. He will not be put to death. So, yeah. Imagine that. Can you imagine sitting in court and the guy in front of you is like, but really, Judge, it was hard because I suffer from wanting to kill people to have sexual relations with them. And you're supposed to be like, well, now it all makes sense. God, no one explained that to me, sir. I would have let you go the first time. No. Ugh, goodness. So one of the things that they found when they were going through his house was a Minnie Mouse, like a Mickey Mouse jacket from back then in the 90s. That big white one. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Black sleeves, white Mickey Mouse on the back. He gives it to his wife. He takes it and gives it to his wife. She tells the detective, her words, not mine. She said it smelled like a whorehouse and she had to wash it 3 or 4 times before the smell came out, is what she told the detective. It was from one of his victims. He had given it to her. And when they got his van, his daughter remembered when she got into the van one time, there was like a big blood stain on the seat. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, I hit a dog. I had to take it to the vet. Like, why are you asking so many questions? I had to try to save a dog. And the kids were like, yeah, okay. Weird. But like, they sat on it, you know? Like, I just can't get over this man. And like, he cried and he legitly said every person's name, and he said he apologized to them and their families individually. And like, one of his daughters went up and like spoke, and it was just overpowering. And like, he showed so much emotion. He has not ever made like a big deal and like talked, done interviews, shit like that. He's kind of like, okay, I've caused enough shame for my family and my children that I'm just gonna like do my time and keep my fucking mouth shut. But so he's just chilling in Washington, just waiting to die, which I don't know. He was one of the people that, I don't know if this is true or not, because, like, of course it's about Corona, but he was one of the people that they were, like, maybe kind of, sort of, we could probably let him out because of the virus, I guess. I saw a big, huge thing about it and on Facebook, of course, so Lord knows if it was true or not, but I just can't, guys, like, sometimes shit just blows me away. And the fact that people can literally go on and have normal lives, like this man videotaped his children Christmas, the whole spiel, having a good time. And then on the 26th, you find two women. That lost their life because you left your home that night. It's insane. Insane. And like, everybody was like, he was kind of like stern, but like, no one thought he was a killer. And like, I guess these women were all talking about it, obviously, amongst themselves. And some of the women that ended up becoming victims said out loud to other friends, like, girl, I know I'm going to be one. Like, I have a feeling something bad's about to happen. And some of these poor women had that feeling. and still were driven to make money. It's crazy. It's sad. And no one has a right to do that. So it's super sad. So shout out to Washington for having like one POS live in there. Walla Walla, I wonder how pretty Walla Walla is. I've only made it as far as Spokane and like the Idaho side right there. I haven't really gone further in like Seattle or anything like that, so maybe a road trip is ahead of me. Anyway, like I said, my day was made awesome doing a late night recording. It's like 10:30. Everyone in my house is asleep. I'm gonna do some dishes and just enjoy being home before I go back to work. On Monday, please pray for me. Think of me. I'm gonna be in so much fucking pain. Oh, guys, it's unreal. But no fear. I will have my fellow podcasters to get me through. Goodness, they'll probably never ever hear this either, but it was just so fucking cool. So cool. But yeah, I love every one of you. Please, please, please do me a favor. Go to iTunes. Give me a review. I have 35 reviews right now, guys, and they are just not fucking cutting it. We need to up that a little bit if we can. So go to iTunes. If you're listening on iTunes, please give me a good review. Anything above a 3-star is fine. Just don't be one of those 1-star assholes. I work hard on this. I give you my heart, my soul. So do that. And then after you're done with that, go to YouTube and go to It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. Subscribe to me. And then go over to Facebook and go to It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. And join the group or the page. There's two of them. And then you can go to Instagram and go to It Is What It Is Pod 19 all together, no spaces, no nothings, and befriend me. And then on that, you will get to my actual Instagram. And if you get that far, fucking befriend me. Or you can go to like one of my almost new favorite places to be, Twitter, and follow me on It Is What It Is 208, because that's where I'm from the great state of Idaho, right next door to where Mr. Yates is being housed. So, yeah, I love all of you. Have a great Memorial Day. Hopefully you guys didn't go camping, because here in Idaho it snowed. So, yay to the work week. See you fuckers on Tuesday. Peace out.